The Living Clean podcast is not affiliated with Narcotics Anonymous, nor do we speak on behalf of NA as a whole. We are simply members sharing our personal experiences and perspectives in recovery-based discussions. The opinions expressed here are our own and not those of Narcotics Anonymous as a fellowship. This is the Living Clean podcast. This podcast is not meant to replace meetings, sponsorship, step work, or service. This podcast is meant to be another tool in your recovery toolbox. Our guests are here to share their experience, strength, and hope with recovery through Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for joining us. All right, welcome back to the Living Clean podcast. Mason S., I'm an addict. We're back for another episode. Tonight we got our good friend Charles K with us, and we're going to break down his recovery journey and also talk about his involvement with the literature conferences. And we're really excited to have Charles here. But before we get started, we're going to start with our introductions like always. I'm going to turn it over to the co-host with the most, Francis.
Francis Addict. My clean date is December 22nd, 1992. And my home group is You Are the Book, Book Study in Chico, California. Let's throw it over to Boyd since he's unmuted.
Yeah, so I'm Boyd P. Let's see. Clean date is April 15th, 1987. Home group is Primary Purpose in Raleigh, North Carolina, Step in Tradition Study. Meets Wednesday nights at 7:30 to 8:30. If you're there, please come. So looking forward to talking with Charles K tonight. This is exciting. I'm jazzed.
Chris.
Hey, I'm Chris. Been in recovery since May 21st, 1990. I'm going to be a short timer on this interview as I got to do a presentation out here in Utah at the regional convention. But appreciate to be able to sit in and listen, particularly since Charles has played such an important role in us having a book, but also has been so helpful to Boyd and I in our research.
And then we have like our token new guy to the history stuff, Kevin.
Hi, my name's Kevin. I'm an addict. My clean date is 9/13 of 23. My home group is Serenity Seekers in Dickinson, North Dakota.
Charles.
Well, my name is Charles K. My clean date is October the 5th, 1978. My home group is How We Recover, and we are a literature study group.
Nice. So I'm really excited about having Charles here. And a lot of people know that I like got really interested in the stories in the back of the basic text. I got clean on the fifth edition, and I just took an interest in all that and trying to figure out who people were. And so I found out a little bit about Charles having the authoring a story, Indian Without a Tribe. And but Chris kind of pulled me into the history of the front end of the book with some interviews during the pandemic with the people that attended the literature conferences. And that was a rich experience. And so Charles, from what I understand, he's attended at least three of the conferences, maybe four, and was the chair of the Sixth World Literature Conference. And so Mason and I had done an episode on the Mid-South Regional Service Conference that we called the Lost Conference, and where they mailed out the approval drafts in Memphis over Thanksgiving in 1981. And so like it led us into even more history. And so we're just really excited to have Charles here. We're quickly approaching the 45th anniversary of the Third World Literature Conference in Memphis. And so let's get into it. Charles, why don't you tell us a little bit about your early recovery, you know, like how you got introduced to NA, where? Yeah.
All right. Well, I got introduced to NA in Omaha, Nebraska, of all places. I was sent to a halfway house there from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I went to my first meeting in Omaha. And I went to my first meeting not knowing what Narcotics Anonymous was. I went there thinking I was going to be able to get some narcotics. And even nudged the guy next to me in the middle of the meeting, and I said, "Is this NA?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, where's the narcotics?" And he said, "Keep coming back." But also at that meeting is where the person giving out chips told me I never had to use again as long as I live. And that's been the reality for me since that time. After I did my time in Omaha, because it was throughout the winter, I ended up going back to Louisiana and living there in Baton Rouge. Continued my recovery there. And my first introduction to anything regarding the book was in Louisiana when I met Bo, and he was talking about people are going to be getting together to try to write a book for Narcotics Anonymous. And this was right before the 81, I think it was the 81 or 80 World Convention in Kansas. And we got together there, and that's when, it was like people were getting a little hyped, and it's like, yeah, I think maybe we can do this. And I remember when he mentioned that to me, I said, "I don't know nothing about writing. I'm not a writer." And his words to me were, "Do you know how to stay clean for 24 hours?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Can you write that down?" I said, "Yeah, I can do that." He goes, "That's all you got to do. Share your experience, strength, and hope." And it didn't matter how much clean time I had, it just mattered that I could share my experience, strength, and hope. And that's what a lot of people did. It wasn't a one person thing, it was a collective effort from addicts all over. The people that were able to attend the conferences were just the worker bees. We were the people who had the time to take off, to go to these places for a week or 10 days at a time and do the grunt work, the sort, the cut and paste, the photocopy, the make sure that everything was available for everybody that was there so that we could continue just editing and going over the input we had to get some basis for the book. I don't know if you've been informed of this, but we started out with three trunks of input, and the input came to there for the newsletter. And it was items that weren't used. And we took all that information that people had sent in and we just started sorting. Okay, this deals with a step, this deals with something else, and putting it in categories so that we could round it up at a later time and start going through it and saying, okay, I like this sentence here, I like that paragraph there, and start getting text out of it so that we could get to some point where, like you're saying, in 81 when the Gray Edition was sent out, that's where that input came from mostly, was from those three trunks and whatever input people had at the time to put into that. And then it just went from there, it just took off, and all the input that came in after that from people saying, okay, online, such and such, maybe it should say this, and then just continued until you got what is the first 10 chapters.
I
So.
think that's kind of interesting that you mentioned that a lot of that material came from newsletters that was that from that weren't used, maybe the you know like they a lot of local newsletters had sprung up
Not
after the
local. This was the world newsletter.
Oh, okay. The Voice.
Okay. Yeah. That was stuff that was sent in for it. And you can only put so much in an edition. And then there was just literally three trunks full of paper from input like that, from addicts all over that are like sending something in for a possible topic or whatever. So
Okay. So your first conference was Lincoln?
no, it was at the there in Kansas.
Oh, you see, okay. So
Yeah.
Wichita,
And then
Kansas.
after Kansas, it went to Lincoln. And then
Right.
from Lincoln, it went to Memphis.
Right.
Okay. I went to the one in Kansas. I didn't go to Lincoln or Memphis. And then I went to every one after that.
Okay.
So.
Well, we'll have to update our spreadsheet, Chris. I don't think we have them down for Wichita.
Right.
That's exciting. So you joined the movement in Warren.
Oh, yeah, I was in Warren.
Yeah. And that was in an old schoolhouse.
Yes, it was.
What was that like? That
Well, you
was
should back
it?
up to the one before that, that was in
Sure.
California in the Union Hall, which
Oh, you
was
were Santa
that
Monica,
thing
right?
was
Number four.
like small as can be.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, here we are working 24 hours a day. Every day we're there. It wasn't like an 8 to 5 thing. You had people working all day, all night. You just go lay on the floor on the side, take a nap, get up and get back to it. It wasn't like okay, here's the schedule for today. You got this group at 8, this group at 9, this it wasn't none of that. It was just we would open, we would pray, and we'd get right into it. We'd break out into breakout groups. Then you would work on whatever section you had. You'd bring it back like at lunchtime. We would read it out loud. Then we would take that group and pass it to the next group. And then you would get somebody else's work. And it would constantly rotate like that. So you weren't working on the same thing all the time. It was getting fresh eyes and fresh ideas on each section. And then, we would go through the night because you had people that were good night owls. You had people that weren't night owls. So it played to whatever your strength was. And we knew we had limited time in these facilities. So we had to get the maximum amount of work done in the least, number of hours. So.
I'm kind of curious about Santa Monica and the attendance of California people. And, like my understanding is the World Service Conference was either right before or right after the Literature Conference. And there were a bunch of people that showed up from California. But I kind of questioned whether it was kind of like innate tourism, like were there a lot of people
Well,
just kind of showing up to sign in, or did they really pitch in and help out? You know what I mean?
you had a few that really wanted to get involved and pitch in, but the majority were tourists, okay? Or they were there kind of with the whole slant of what are y'all doing? What gives you the right to do it? Who do you think you are? There was a lot of that. And they were met with an equal amount of, well, we're addicts and we're doing it, and you can, pound salt because we don't give a shit what you think. There was a lot of that, you want to bow up on us? Well, we're getting ready to bow right back up because you've had an opportunity to do this for how many ever years and you didn't do anything. We decided to take action and now you don't like that. Now
The
the
old
trustees were
guard.
involved, but the local fellowship, there wasn't a lot of local fellowship coming. You had office people coming to like actually see what's going on and see if they could find a something that they could destroy us with. And then you had some of the people that were just curious that they had heard about this thing, and it's like, oh, what's going on? But the actual number of people from California that continued, pretty non-existent. And you can check the records and all that and see that there isn't a big showing from there, other than the trustees, which were consistent and were backing and were supportive. So.
So, the Santa Monica draft, like there's like what happened to the Santa Monica draft? Like the big NA, like who's like E Hollywood story of, like who stole it, what happened to it? You didn't we have to kind of reassemble like the book in Warren, like because something got lost in Santa Monica?
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay.
I know that we got to Warren. We jumped right in because we had made progress and we had all our progress there, and it's like we just continued on.
Okay, that could be any conspiracy stuff I've bought into.
It might be because it didn't slow us down. I
Yeah.
mean, we had a very productive, Warren Literature Conference.
So that was like Jim Miller
Oh yeah.
Country and
Well, it
Roy
was at his
Drum.
house basically, and then
Yeah.
we were at Warren in that old schoolhouse, and then we went to Jim's farm. Most of us were at his farm sleeping in the barn or everywhere we could plop down, or and then at the schoolhouse, the local fellowship, I'll say, they were real good because every day they would bring us sandwiches. They'd bring us, some kind of food to eat because we were there. We didn't go anywhere. It didn't like, okay, everybody, let's go down to Denny's and have breakfast or something. You were working and you picked up whatever was there. They made sure you had coffee so you could stay caffeinated the whole time. But, this was single purpose, work driven. And everybody that was there doing that, that's where their focus was. It wasn't about comforts. It wasn't about anything else, but we have a job to do. And the sooner we do it, we're going to be saving lives. And it's just a matter of the work to get done.
Well, I know we're kind of jumping around from different conferences. I want to follow up on your kind of question, Francis. So, in the minutes to the Fifth World Lit Conference in Ohio, it said that one of the conference priorities is to get the first five chapters typed. And the minutes reflect that the first five chapters of the book were lost. So, something had happened, and this was reported by Roger, something had happened between Santa Monica and Warren, where those first five chapters were lost. There's another theme around this, which is after the Sixth World Lit Conference, the plan is for the approval form to be printed. And then Joseph is having trouble getting the final draft. And I'm just kind of going quickly from memory, but this is something we focused on in the blog post that went along with their podcast episode on the Memphis
Mid-South
Thanksgiving
Regional.
Mid-South Regional. And in that situation, some of the feedback that we read was that some folks who've been involved at the Sixth World Lit Conference were dissatisfied that their work on really getting the final group conscience on the approval form, that if, essentially Bo and Joseph were kind of trying to piece back together kind of what that final approval draft was. So I didn't know if you had any just input in general
Oh,
about.
absolutely. Because I was one of those people that was very upset about that. Because what was approved in group conscience and what got printed wasn't the same. And I said, what happened here? We had group conscience, and you got stuff in here that wasn't approved. Well, yaddy, yaddy, yaddy. And it's like, I don't care who you are. We had group conscience. We all sat there. We voted on this stuff. We approved this. You were given a copy of what was approved. Okay. And then it got altered. Now, who altered it? I have no idea. I just know that what was voted on and what was eventually put out, there was discrepancies as to the accuracy of that. Now, I can't tell you who changed or who did or how that came about or if they lost something and then tried to put something back by memory. But I do know that what I sat at that conference and I approved vote by vote by vote, the final draft of that was a little different than what was put out, you know? So why it happened, who will ever know?
One of the things that we've recently added into the basic text history is showing them the minutes from the final session of the Six World Lit Conference, and kind of pointing out that it essentially it starts at late in the evening, and it shows we're taking a break at 3 in the morning, and then kind of one of the last entries is 9 a.m. book is approved, and we put that in there to show just kind of dedicated service to be doing this through the night to get to that point. And I'm looking at the blog post that I'd written to support the podcast episode. And my notes here are that in early October of 81, Joseph reached out to Bo saying he hadn't received the final manuscript from Roger and he'd been unable to reach him by phone. A few more weeks gone by, they were placing calls to known members in South Florida. These members saw Roger at meetings and relayed their messages, but Roger never followed up. So, without that final manuscript, Joseph found himself needing to recreate what had been approved, particularly what the last untyped changes had occurred. And so, in trying to be assure some fidelity to the consciousness of those who worked on it in Miami, Joseph shipped it to Bo overnight for review. But that comment of, that there were some folks who were not happy with the reconstruction, quote, because it was not, that was not what had been voted on approved, which is what you were just talking about.
Well, and the other caveat to that is no one ever called me and said, "Hey, do you have the approved manuscript here?" You know? Now, they did try to get a hold of Roger, and Roger was still in South Florida, and whatever happened there could have been just, you know, personalities get heightened, and whenever you're working long hours and stuff like that, if you have character defects, they're probably going to come to the surface and you're going to have to deal with them, you know? And it's like, but, you know, throughout hearing you say that Roger, I mean, they were trying to get a hold of Roger and all of that. Well, my phone number hadn't changed. I hadn't moved. You know, my information was easy to connect to me and nobody connected.
And you were
So,
the chair of that
right. I was
lit
the chair of
conference.
that conference,
It seemed
you
like
know?
you'd be a reasonable,
Right.
understandable person to reach out to about that.
Well, and so was Bob Gray. Bob Gray was involved at the time, and he was right there, my neighbor, basically. And nobody got a hold of either one of us, you know? I don't know if they were dependent on the tapes that we had or what, but it's like, you know, it's kind of odd that, you know, I know Roger was the chairperson of the Lit Committee, but, you know, how it went from there to there and how, like I said, how it got different, I don't know, but something got different. And maybe the reason is they couldn't get the original manuscript, so they just did what they thought. But,
Yeah, I have kind of a follow-up to that. I'm curious because now that we're on the other side, we obviously got a basic text and everything ended up working out. But what was the way past all of that? Once there was this obvious difference within what was presented and what was approved in group conscience, how did we get past that?
Well, I mean, you got to look back at the dynamic too, that the core people there, Bo, Roger, Paige, Jim Miller, all of them, that was the okay? And the clique kind of would do their click thing. And if you went against the click, then you were kind of outed. And it's like I was always the guy on that edge going, you know what? I ain't buying this shit. It's like, and so of course, I'm not going to be the one they're going to be talking to because I'm like not just buying the whole cake and saying, yay, thank you. I'm questioning. And that's been, I don't know, a asset or a liability for me my whole recovery, because I've never shied from saying, hold on a minute. This right here isn't passing the smell test. So what's going on? And you know, it's like it's kind of the same way today when you get into world service. Is like if you're not part of that little bunch, they ain't gonna want to be talking to you. They want a kind of a an agreeable panel of people rather than questioning people. So, but that's society in general, you know? It's like everybody wants to be okay and think that their idea is the best and not be questioned. So.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about it, like you're talking about the clique, you know, it's kind of like his little core group of people that he
Right.
trusts, maybe. And then there's this crisis where they don't have the manuscript that was approved, and I'm like, I wonder if he was trying to contain the crisis and not call the other people, you know, like the chair. Let's not call Charles,
Right.
let's try to handle this on our own. And it like potentially
That could
backfired.
very well be, you know. And also it could have been, we really don't want California to know that we got a glitch here, you know, because that would be fodder to like shoot them down. I understand that. Because they were looking for any option they could find to knock the feet out from under Bo and everybody else involved. Because that whole us and them thing of who do y'all think y'all are? We're the old timers. And, you know, you didn't ask, you didn't come to us. But it's like, well, yeah, they did. You just weren't paying attention, you know? And it's like, you can be mad all you want, but you haven't taken the action. And that was a rift for many years right there until some of those older people started moving on and new blood started getting in. But
Well, I think it's kind of telling, like in relationship to the controversy we still have over the changes that were made between the World Service Conference, where they approve, like we have a book, and then the book is published, and there were changes made to the fourth and the ninth tradition, which, like that controversy stays with us. And it appears that, like there's been some history with making changes outside of group conscience, like with the history of the book itself, like
well,
prior to
but
that.
see, that fourth and ninth tradition thing was all on Jimmy. Jimmy made those changes and just arbitrarily said, we need to change this. And, you know, some people will tell you, hooray for the change. And other people will go, look, before it was changed, it was kind of made a clear dividing line between what's NA and what's not NA.
Yeah.
And you take that away, now you're trying to say that everything is NA. I'm old school. I'm from that other part that says no. Area service and all of that, that's not NA. That's service. Groups are NA. Dances aren't NA. Conventions aren't NA. Those are parties that we put on for ourselves, but that's not NA. But I'll have people fight me for that all day long. And it's like, that's great. You can have that opinion. This is my opinion, you know? And we can coexist.
So I'm involved with the another podcast, the anonymous podcast, and there's a guy named Eric that was like talking about, you know, like he was question, he was wondering like how much group conscience was done on the book. He was like, I think there was a group conscience on every single line in the basic text.
There
And I'm
was.
like, well, there was. I think it was done that way at the conferences, but also, you know, like when they sent out the Miami review draft, it was lined. It was lined, and people got a chance to look at every single line.
That is not
And
right.
no? Okay.
Because what came out of Miami was sent for no further input. This is what we're presenting to you for approval from the fellowship. So,
Right. I was talking about the Memphis review
Memphis
draft, the
okay.
great
The
book.
Memphis review was sent out for input, but that was the only one. No other one was sent out to the fellowship saying, "Hey, give us your input." We solicited input from every known group through letters and phone calls and stuff like that to get as many people as we could involved, but.
After Miami, it should have stayed the same.
Right. And then, you know, and then you had Philadelphia where they did the stories. That was a whole separate thing. But the first 10 chapters, when it came out of Miami, that's what we presented to the World Service Conference for final approval.
One thing we didn't touch on, can we go back just a little bit? I'm interested in how you became the chair of the sixth conference. How did that happen?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, Mason. I had just been involved and been following along, and it's like we got down to Florida, and it's like, Charles, be chair. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So I've always had a good ability at like kind of running business meetings and stuff and staying on task and not going down rabbit holes. And we definitely needed leadership like that to stay on task and not get in a million rabbit holes because.
Who voluntold you?
No, we vote. They voted.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a vote. It wasn't just, okay, you're appointed. It was like, you know, all in favor and the hands went up and that was that. So.
Looking back on that now, Charles, what does that mean to you now?
Oh, well, the whole book thing has been probably one of the most defining moments in my life, you know, that having the ability to be a part of something that I really knew right from the beginning was this is something that's way bigger than any of us. And this is going to have something that's going to last way beyond my lifetime. And, you know, thank goodness I've been clean long enough now to see what's happened just from the little bit of labor that we put in at the millions and millions of people that are clean simply because they got a book in whatever language they're in now and were able to find hope and recovery. You know, the basics of that has not changed since we put the approval on it in Miami. And you know, it isn't a 5-star literary masterpiece, but it is honest information that any addict can pick up and go, I relate. They're telling my story right here, regardless of what drugs you did. I mean, you know, Look at it now. We got a zillion crackheads in recovery, and the book came out before crack.
Wow.
Okay. You were dealing with, junkies and speed freaks and potheads and people that did pills mainly. That was your target audience. And then the onrush of cocaine and crackheads, but they could still pick that book up and relate to it, even though we weren't even thinking about that. We were just thinking about the demographic that was around us at the time. And how can we reach out to them and give them something that they can use? But it's a God thing. I mean, don't forget that. This is a total God thing. And we would pray before every session and invite God into the mix and tell him to guide our pens, open our minds, and make us instruments of him. And you know what? That's what you got. You got a bunch of people that were willing to be a vessel for something greater than them to develop something that's greater than all of us. So.
Come on in, Chris.
Yeah, that's really a beautiful way that you described about the honest effort. But I think the only other word that comes to me as I listen to that is the compassion, like an honest, compassionate effort. Because there was a desire to see addicts who are suffering be able to find the gift of recovery. What I wanted to kind of lay into this conversation, either for now or for later, just because I'm going to be jumping off in a few minutes, is your experience with literature and terminology before the basic text, and your observations or experience with the change in terminology and ways of identifying oneself after the basic text was published.
Well, before the basic text, you had everything from dual addicts to cross addicts to addicts, alcoholics to I'm a junkie, I'm a dope fiend. I mean, and just whatever little chic, intro you wanted to have for yourself, that's what people did. After the basic text and after we, tried to get some standard terminology there. Then it started transitioning into I'm an addict, my name is such and such. Identifying that you're an addict and then introducing who you are. And that helped because in the beginning you had a lot of andas. Okay. Everybody was an addict and an alcoholic. And it's like the whole concept of the disease of addiction said, look, we're just addicts. It doesn't matter what drug you used, we're an addict. So that's how we're going to identify. And if you think that you have to identify as this, that, and the other, well, that's your choice, but.
Did you have any observations of people who had gotten into recovery before the basic text having difficulty making the transition?
Absolutely.
And just any
Absolutely.
thoughts or observations about.
Well, and I mean, you had groups that that still wanted to use AA literature and stuff. And it's like, I'm sorry, but we have traditions, and the traditions are very clear as to what we can and can't do. And you can't do that. And I mean, it got heated sometimes, and people's personalities came to the surface, and you can't tell us what to do. And it's like, look, if you want to call yourself an NA meeting, here's the parameters you got to stay in. And everybody wants to say, oh, we're autonomous and we can do what we want. And it's like, no, you have freedom inside these parameters. That's it, and it was a learning curve because, I mean, at the time, too. We were going around to places like Addicts Anonymous and telling them about NA and telling them, y'all need to come on over here because this is where the dope fiends are, young people's AA. Look, 99% of y'all are drug addicts. Why don't you come over here where the rest of your family is and not hide out? Because back then you still had the whole, well, there's nobody getting clean in NA, there's no substantial clean time. Who are you going to have for a sponsor? All that kind of stuff. I got to go to AA and get that. And it's like, no, you don't. I mean, somebody's got to stop and say, I'm not doing that. I'm planting my feet here and I'm going to ride or die right here. And I was one of those people that's like, I don't relate to that. I relate to this. And this is where I'm just stuck. I'm either going to make it or I'm not. And you just sometimes self-will can be a good thing. Like, I'm going to show you. So, and there were days like that where it's like, oh, I am going to just have to show you and just keep staying clean. And, it can be done and be that example to that, you don't need to go anywhere. You can get all you need right here.
I see I saw the kid come on, and I've seen all these pictures of like the people in the movement that like Bo had published a bunch of pictures from the conferences. There's a picture of you without a shirt, like right next to Roy Drum, and
Yeah, that's from Warren.
yeah, I see like I see like I see, like you were this guy's you were Kevin's age when this was happening. And then like I throw it back to the 70s and the early 80s. I imagine there were Vietnam vets and hippies, and I know Bo was a hippie. Like
Yeah,
that.
well, Bo was a beatnik. That's what Bo was.
Like I think about the energy that came swept in to the movement, Gina, and
Right.
like I heard stories about you hitchhiking and the Tom the Red wasn't from his red hair, but from a sunburn he received, like getting stuck in the desert and like all like there's a part of me that romanticizes what it might have been like as a young person in the literature movement, and like we're gonna get this book, and like I see the cadence of the literature conferences quickening, like it goes like
Right.
almost a year from one to two, and then 6 months from two to
Right.
three, and it's rolling quicker and
Right.
quicker, and like man, like I have like a book study that I do. And it's an in-depth book study. We read a paragraph, everybody talks about the paragraph, and like I feel the presence of that consciousness that you were talking about, like that you were praying to a loving God to work through you. But I also like just from like all the interviews I got to do with Chris and reading the minutes, like I feel the presence of these people that worked on the book. That people are dying and we need this book. And so like as a Tuesday and Thursday mornings, 6:30 in the morning, standing room only in our book study, and we slow it down and we feel it and we feel you. So, like super powerful stuff. And thank you so much for what you've helped give us, like as a fellowship.
You're more than welcome.
Yeah. Mason was about to say something until I cut
Yeah,
in.
no, I just want to follow up with that because we've had the opportunity to interview several people who've been involved, who were involved, and several of those, a few of those people, found themselves after the basic text was released. They find themselves drifting away from the fellowship for one reason or another. Fortunately, some of them have come back. Some of them didn't. And my question is, did you like being involved in this literature movement was such a unique thing that will never be duplicated inside of NA again, just because of the advances in technology and the way we do things now. Was there like a grieving period once the process was over? Did you feel like you were missing something? And did you ever have thoughts of going away for a little bit.
Well, no, because right after that literature conference, I got involved starting the Florida region. They didn't even have an actual region till December of that year, of the right after the World Service Conference. And I got involved formulating and forming the Florida region, and that kept me busy for quite a few years. And then it's like, and then in 87, I ended up going to Hong Kong and working for a couple of years. So that's the break I had. So I went over there working where I had one meeting a week, and I was lucky if I could get like 30 minutes of the meeting from, like, I had to take boats and buses and cabs to get to the meeting, you know? So it was like, it was different. But no, I get sometimes kind of frustrated with the way things are going? Yeah, I do. And then I got to remember that, you know what? I bet you people were frustrated with us when we were new and what we were doing. And, you know, we were kind of what they perceived the norm, we were outside the norm. And just like what I perceived the norm, there's people outside the norm, and I've got to be open-minded to allow them to do that and grow with them. Otherwise, you know, just like the dinosaurs, I'm going to be extinct, and I don't want that to happen. So I just got to constantly be changing. And sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. But that's what we do.
Well, let's go on past that just a little bit. Let's talk about post all the conferences. Let's just talk about your some of the ups and downs of recovery from when the basic text came out, and kind of bring us up to date with what's going on now.
Oh man, I mean, I've had plenty of that. When I was working on the basic text, right after that, I got married, got divorced, got married again, had a bunch of kids, got divorced. I got married for the last time now, and have a blended family of 9 kids. So, and I got 9 grandkids. I've been through the horrors of having a daughter commit suicide and a son OD. And it's like, you know, life shows up. And it doesn't matter how long you've been clean or what step you're working on or how much you pray, life happens. And sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's very joyous, you know? Sometimes it's just regular. And, you know, when you look at it, you think, man, my life is kind of boring. You know, I work, I sleep, I go to meetings, I, you know, sponsor people. And it's like my sponsorship network is pretty huge with the guys I sponsor and the amount of people that they sponsor. It's like, I sponsor 2 guys right now, one in Miami and one out of Fort Lauderdale area. And between the two of them, they probably have 200, 300 people under their sponsorship tutelage, you know? So it's just that ripple effect, you know? You help one person. And it's funny because one of the guys I sponsored in Fort Lauderdale early on had sponsored these 2 guys that I sponsor now. He's since passed away, but you know, you help that one guy, and then he goes and helps someone who helps someone who helps someone who helps someone. And before you know it, there's this huge pool of people that were all affected because you took the time and said, yes, I'll sponsor you, and then put the work in to be a sponsor to them. And it's like, so I like that, you know. That keeps me coming back, and it keeps me, like, I got a lot of guys that got a lot of clean time, but my newcomer is coming up on 7 years next month, and I've had him since day one. And it's like, It's like I prayed about it and I said, God, I think I need a newcomer. All my guys have got 25, 30, 40 years, 44 years. I need a newcomer. And he sent me one who's, a live one and thinks outside the box and keeps me on my toes. And, but I'm grateful for that because I get different perspectives. And, go ahead.
We have a young lady that was our token newcomer that came in, and she developed this formula where she comes up with one good question. That was what, like, when she comes in and she knows she's like, I'm gonna just have this one really good question, and she's done that. And then I've tasked Kevin with this, and I don't know if he's still with us, but you were talking about the newcomer, so he's our token newcomer. I sent him the minutes to the Sixth World Literature Conference, and so when he's ready, he can ask his one question. Like, because we
All
want
right.
to let them have, like, a chance at a question. I don't know if what's going on with them. He might be driving, but this is your chance, Kevin. Okay, we'll keep going.
I'm here. I just had to unmute it. All right, so my question for you, Charles, is what was inadequate about the Lit Handbook, and what ended up being updated with it?
Repeat that again.
What was inadequate about the Lit Handbook, and what ended up being updated?
Oh, I really couldn't tell you what they've done to the Lit Handbook
Yeah.
because at the time it was pretty much non-existent. And it's like, I mean, they might have had like a little something about how to do a newsletter or something, but there really wasn't any kind of like, actual procedure like, okay, here's what you need to do. Start this way and continue step by step. And I haven't read the Lit Handbook that's out now, if there is one, because it seems like that's the way we make literature now is totally different than what was the way it was made back then.
Boyd, was you going to say something?
Well, yeah, I mean, that just brought up a good question. I mean, Charles, you were involved with the original process of the basic text and the way they do literature now. Are you a fan of it, or do you have an opinion about it, or
Well, I mean, I think we should utilize technology. I think that the days of, everybody meeting at a designated spot and then working 24 hours a day is maybe not as productive as you can send your input, email your input to this one location, a clearinghouse, and then they will do whatever they have to do to sort it and then send it back with all the input so that you can go through it in the comfort of your home and make changes and send it back. That's efficient, and it can get things done a lot quicker. You also have professional editors and stuff like that that are taking your input and correcting the grammar, doing the punctuation, all that kind of stuff, which is tedious and takes time. And so it's effective, we keep pumping out literature because we keep pumping out literature. I'm not necessarily so sure we need to keep pumping it out, but when your cash flow depends on literature sales, you got to keep pumping out literature so that there's a new one, everybody's got to have it, you'll get that influx of cash, and then you can go on to the next thing. So,
I'm strung out on the new literature. Like, I'm like, oh, I gotta get it. And then sometimes it really hits, like, and sometimes it does. Like, I was kind of let down by the sponsorship book, but like, I love the Living Clean book. Like,
Right.
I find stuff in the Guiding Principles book all the time. So, like, sometimes I'm let down. Sometimes I'm like, ooh, I get the approval draft, and I, like, start quoting the literature before everybody else has the book and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, I was real happy with the guiding principles.
Yeah.
That right there, because prior to that, I had like written my own tradition workbook with people that I would do like a tradition workshop where we would get 10, 12 people. And part of the workshop was you had to come with questions every week on whatever that tradition we were on. And then we would gather them all together, and I compiled a workbook out of input from the people that were doing it.
It
And
didn't look
that
like
was
this, did
no, but no, it wasn't, that wasn't
I'm
mine.
trying to
It
find. I'm
like
trying to figure out who came up with this one.
did you check and see if that's out of Texas?
I don't know where it's from. It doesn't
Because
have any
Lone
markings.
Star put together a tradition book too, that region there did. But this was just me doing it because people were wanting to go over the traditions at a little deeper level, and it's like, okay, then here, this will get you going, and maybe we can create more questions and more answers from the input. So
You know what it reminds me of? I don't know if you're familiar with the Back to the Basics step working guide.
I got all that.
Yeah, but it's kind of put together like that, but it's called
Okay.
the original tradition step guide, and it's
I've
just
never.
yeah, it's
Well, if
interesting.
it's the back to basic
I've not
worksheets
seen it.
where you got the step and the tradition and then the questions, that was all from Greg,
Yeah, that.
because I've give those to my guys still to this day to work steps and traditions with, because it's a good get your feet wet, into the steps and traditions. And then, I've had them work the step working guide. And now I do like, okay, you're going to do guiding principles and you're going to be answering all these questions. And when you get done with that, you're going to actually have knowledge of how the traditions work at different levels, not just a quick synopsis in the basic text, but here, as a member, here's how this applies to you. As area service, this how, or region, this is how it applies. And here's how it applies at world, because it's very different. It's similar, but it's different. And you need to know that if you're going to be one of these people that wants to be involved. And I don't know, I always like traditions because that gives me the boundaries. So
Yeah.
I can play within these boundaries and I'm good. Without them, you're going to have chaos, because that's just the way we are.
I love how the guiding principles gives you instructions too on how to give it back, right? Like there's workshop instructions. Like
Right.
so when you get ready to share what you've learned, you have some instructions on how to do that too, in a way to do it. I thought that was pretty unique addition to that book.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Your catchphrase. I posted something on Facebook, those C'est la vie, motherfucker. There was a stamp that I think that went around, and it was stamped on the Fourth World Literature. No, it was the Warren, the Warren minutes. So like that stamp is on the minutes for the Fifth World Literature Conference. I might be getting them mixed up. Four was Santa Monica, five was Warren. So
Right.
can you tell us how that came out? And will you say it for us?
Well, yeah, c'est la vie, motherfucker, which if you know any kind of French, c'est la vie means such is life. And it's like, you start getting on the pity potty or you start whining too much, I'd probably drop that on you. I don't know who made the stamp. That could have been anybody, but it's just, one of those things that came up and it stuck for some reason. And it still follows me to this day. So.
It did here. Hey, Al Reiser commented that he had a t-shirt that said C'est la vie, motherfucker,
Yeah.
that came out of the movement. And I'm like, really? I'm gonna
Yeah.
make me one of those t-shirts. I'm gonna bring it back.
But yeah.
You were telling us before we started recording that there was another saying that's kind of followed you around for a while. Which one was that?
That was work the steps or die, motherfucker.
There you go.
Okay. It's like, this isn't a joke. You either do this or you die. And we forget that this is life and death sometimes. It's all fun and games and we can laugh and joke, but the reality is if I don't do this, I'm going to die. And today, I don't want to die. When I was using, I didn't care, but I care today. And it's like I need to remain conscious of that and in check of that every single day that, I don't get to slack. I don't get to be complacent. I've got to maintain, my program on a daily basis. It doesn't. What I did last week isn't, where I can stand and just say, okay, I'm done. And I think, that's the basis of anybody who's got long-term recovery is you realize that this is something we got to do all the time. And the payoff is so great. It's like, why would I stop? It's like, I'm just totally thrilled with the end result of whatever work I have to put in.
Well, we're at our hour, and we typically ask the question at the end of the interview, and the question is about the newcomer. And you're kind of were already answering it, but we'll be more intentional about a question. Is there anything you'd like to say to the newcomer that may be listening right now? Or somebody that's struggling in their recovery, like that needs a little bit of hope. Do you have a hope shot?
Well, no matter how bad it seems right now, if you use, it's only going to be 10 times worse. That's never the answer, and it's never the solution for whatever's going on. If you can come here, if you can get connected to a power greater than yourself on an intimate level, then your recovery will be easy. If you're fighting making that commitment to a God of your understanding, then you're fighting the program because this is a spiritual program. Okay? And there isn't like I work a step and then God's over here. God is integrated in every single thing that we do in this program. And the sooner you can grab a hold of that and get comfortable with that, the easier your life is going to get, and the more fulfilling and full and rich your recovery is going to be. Because we're not here to do this by ourselves. This is a community thing, and it's a God thing. And the more I can get him in the middle of it, the better off I am. Because let's not forget that the very best you ever did got you coming in the doors of a meeting and asking for help. That was your best. Totally broken, totally dejected, desperate, hopeless. That's the best you could do on your own. Today, I have a life second to none. Today, it continues to get better year after year, day after day. Otherwise, why would I keep coming back? It's like I could probably find 10 other things to do. If this didn't work, but it works. It worked then, it works now, it works tomorrow. And it doesn't matter what kind of addict you are, this is a place that you can come and find answers and find hope, find community that will walk every step of the way with you, no matter how hard it gets. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Charles. And thank our other guests too, Chris and Boyd, Kevin, and of course, the co-host with the most, Francis. That's all we got for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode. We'll see you then. Thank you for joining us on our Living Clean podcast. This is another platform that we can share our message of recovery, which is an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Join that no matter what club. You can contact us through text. The number is 931-306-9364.